telehealth best practices. If the client's not alone, how do you handle that? If they're drinking or using a substance during session, how do you handle that? Which we've actually had a couple of times and with telehealth. It's like they're home and they're relaxed. And we recently had one client that did not take that well, telling them that could not be a thing. And that was rough.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kate Walker. I'm a marriage and family therapist, practice owner, and professor of counselor education who took a passion for training the next generation of mental health providers and turned it into a multi six-figure business that designs the courses that teach mental health providers how to be clinical supervisors. Teaching graduate students and seasoned counselors, I learned about the fears. Fears about failing, quitting toxic work environments where you're seeing 80 clients a week, fears about starting a private practice, running out of money, getting in trouble by the licensing board, the IRS, you name it. I created the Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses community so mental health providers like you could have a step-by-step guide and learn actionable steps to achieve the security, freedom, and satisfaction of a counseling career you'll love. Look, you had the dream to become a mental health professional. You got the degree, you took the exams, you put in the time, whatever your business is, a private practice, maybe you want to sell courses like I do, you're adding clinical supervision, you want to write a book or get paid to speak, whatever it is, you are too important to your community to lose to getting in trouble, giving up, going broke, and burning out. Are you ready to break through those fears once and for all? I thought so. Let's get to work.
Welcome to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses, where it's all about working smarter, not harder. And here's your host, Dr. Kate Walker.
Who loves a good farmer's market?
You know, I tell people all the time, the reason I do the workshops and the webinars and the group practice summit and the podcast is so that I get to meet really smart and interesting people. And Ashley Hubbard is one of those people. I met her for the first time when I was interviewing her in the group practice summit this year, and she knows her stuff. I mean, I call a policy and procedures manual the holy grail for the boss, right? Or, you know, I think I called it like the Bible for the boss. It really is the accountability you need, the explanations your employees need in order to make sure that your practice, wherever it is that you're the boss, is running like it should. And Ashley knows how to teach you this. She knows how to make it simple and understandable and doable. And you know, I love speakers like that. So take a listen to Ashley. And don't forget, if you are a supervisor and you're listening to this, we are offering season tickets to the Texas Supervisor Coalition workshop series happening in 2023-24. For a few more weeks. Once that first workshop happens, those season tickets no longer are there. They go away. So if you're listening to this and you're a supervisor and you're interested in a season ticket to those workshops, that's 16 CEs for supervision and all of the topics that we advertise, you got to grab this. It's a wonderful opportunity and it won't last. So it's easy to do. Just go to katewalkertraining.com/season ticket. It's all one word, katewalkertraining.com/SEASONTICKET. All right, guys, without further ado, here's Ashley Hubbard. And now, this is probably like, I would say the first or second thing I get asked for help on the most from group practice owners. And that is a policy and procedures manual. And Ashley Hubbard is going to present Crafting a Policies and Procedures Manual, how to make sure your employees understand exactly what you expect from them and what they can expect from you, which is just like the holy grail of the boss, right? All right, Ashley, welcome. I'm so happy to see you and meet you. This is the first time we've met. So welcome to the webinar, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, so I am presenting over having a policy and procedure manual. A little bit about me. I am the owner of a group practice in Texas. We are completely online, so we're a telehealth group practice. I have a team of graduate students and provisionally licensed clinicians, aka associates, and a fully licensed clinician. I offer coaching, consultation, retreats, and have a few online communities as well. So what we're going to be covering in our time together here, it is a little bit of a dry content. There's no exciting new theories, counseling theories, or anything that we're going to be learning, but it's so helpful and so informative. So let's talk about in this session, what could go wrong without a manual? What is a manual? Why it's important to have one? What it does? Kind of the onboarding process. What should be in the manual? How often you should review it, and when to send updates for employees to sign. So some of the things that you're going to want in your manual include information on your notes, treatment plans, time off, bonus structures if you offer bonuses to your employees, state guidelines, working with children, CPS guidelines, and so much more. We're going to kind of dig into a little bit of that. But it's so important to have all of these things in a manual. Some of these things, it's like, okay, well, we learned this in school. We know the policies. We know the guidelines. We should know this. But it's always a great reminder for accountability. So why is it important to have a manual? Consistency, a standard set of guidelines is important, not only for you as the employer, but for the employee. And I'll take a second to say, this is for employees, W-2 employees. Manuals generally are not for 1099 contract workers, but that's a whole separate topic. But this is an employee policy and procedure manual or interns, student intern manual as well. You want to, for compliance, help ensure that the organization yourself is complying with your rules as well as relevant laws and regulations, efficiency. You complete tasks more efficiently by providing clear instructions and guidelines. It's a great training tool when you're onboarding a new clinician, even a new administrative assistant, having this manual where they can say, oh, I have a clear example of how you want me to write notes, treatment plans. Yeah, the list goes on. It helps with providing training instead of them coming in and going, what do I do? What's next? And then accountability, not only for you, but for them as well.
Ashley, can I bring up one thing? Because I want everybody to realize one of your biggest clients, air quotes, is Midwestern State University, right? You bring on a lot of their grad students. One of our speakers last night was talking about how that's a great way to sort of vet future colleagues, right? And so I love it. And so as y'all think about questions that you're going to ask Ashley, and if that was sort of a little seed that got planted with you, I want you to, you know, ask her about that as well, because that's how I got your name. It was Dr. Fox at Midwestern State. So she has a lot of experience onboarding newbies, like real newbies.
Yes. And I have 8 student interns this semester and going into the summer. And I love working with students, and it's very important to have a policy and procedure manual.
We have one question already, and I knew this would come up. Jocelyn is asking, so why not for contract work?
Yes. So contract workers, they are, with the IRS, their own business owners. They are coming on to work with you as their business owner. So for example, if you hire a biller, this is separate from counseling, but if you hire a biller, they have their own business. They're a contract worker. You're not telling them how to run their business. It's the same with a contract therapist. With the IRS and that distinguishing factor, you cannot tell them how to run their business. You can only allow them to see clients under you. They should have their own EHR system. They should have their own policies and procedures. It's a whole topic to get on, but generally a policies and procedures, you cannot dictate or tell or provide benefits to a contract worker. So there's that little side note there. And actually for this, I have the chats pulled up because I want to ask, what do you feel like could go wrong without having a policy and procedure manual? If you could take a second and put in the comments in the chats, in the chat. What do you feel like not having a manual, not having any sense of direction could provide with for counselors? And Cheryl, I'll go back to your question about 1099 and a little bit about the EHR. Liability for employee mistakes. Yep, exactly. So saying they weren't told to do whatever it was. It's accountability for them, but also for you. If you give expectation verbally and you forget what you gave them because it's not written down, and then later tell them to do something else, that's on you, but you're the boss and there's no clear established guideline there, right? No protocol how to handle emergencies, crisis, inconsistent practices. That's huge. No, exactly. No evaluation procedures. If you're telling them they've done something that goes against your guidelines, well, what are your guidelines? Then there's no direction there. So yes, lack of direction, lack of efficiency, compliance issues, and difficulty training and onboarding. Thank you guys for participating in that one. So a few things that should go in the manual. We're going to talk about therapist responsibilities. You want to talk about, you know, their expectations surrounding confidentiality, something we should all know, but it's always good to have it written down again, that they need to assess for the risk of suicide and the expectations surrounding that. You want them to know when notes and treatment plans are due, termination notes and what that looks like, and performing crisis intervention. This is kind of a quick overview of the therapist's responsibilities. And then we kind of get into the nitty gritty, but you want to kind of outline bullet points of what they're responsible for, what you're asking them to do. Another thing that should be in the manual is a list of your intake documents. Even if you have a receptionist or admin assistant or somebody send the intake documents, it's helpful for the counselors to know what documents are being sent, just in case they end up sending documents to the clients, or if they're responsible for sending their own intake documents, you want to list what those are. That might be informed consent, privacy practices, and HIPAA. Intake questionnaire, you know, what does that look like for couples? What does that look like for adolescents and adults? Consent for telehealth, if you're doing telehealth, your payment agreement, which should include the information surrounding no-show policy or late cancellation policy, credit card forms, assessments, whatever that looks like for your practice, and any other things that your practice sends. You want to just outline that very clearly in the manual. Scheduling guidelines. So who schedules the appointment in your practice? If it's an administrative assistant or receptionist, you still want to outline what that looks like. If the counselor doesn't know the policies, there's often overlap when the client is contacting the counselor to cancel or reschedule or vice versa, then you want to definitely outline your scheduling policies. What is your late cancellation or no-show policy and resulting fees, steps to scheduling and having that first intake appointment and the expectations for that? Confidentiality, do you ask for date of birth or driver's license if telehealth, and kind of outlining that? Steps to notify admin or staff for no-show or late cancellations. At my practice, we have an appointment at email, that appointments at vibrantjourneycounseling.com. And we have our counselors email that email to let us know this client was a no-show. In simple practice, when we've already taken payment for the day, it won't let you adjust the calendar from show to no-show or late cancellation if you don't have billing rights. And so they email that. So just having a policy surrounding that. Is there a couple of questions?
Yeah, we got a couple of questions. So do you have a manual that you sell and people can edit?
I do, actually, yes, I share that at the end. So definitely happy to share this as well. This is the bullet point version. And then I have it all written out in the manual with all the guidelines. It's about 35 pages long of the manual that I do sell. And the link to that's at the end.
And we'll put that in the resources page that we give everybody. But while we're paused, because this is something that I want to kind of tie into what Jeffrey was talking about yesterday, which was fees. And somebody asked about fee splitting and how do you pay and all of these things. Mm-hmm. So I know this isn't that, but I'm looking at, and your policy and procedures manual is going to tell your therapist, you will charge this for a no-show. You will charge this for a late cancel. You will, right? So this isn't like up to you. And well, you know, if you've been 10 years experience, I mean, this is something where the policy and the procedures will set all of that.
That's correct. Yep. And it sets guidelines for what's constituted as an emergency or not an emergency for the cancellation. If you offer, you know, a free, if you don't charge for it, like if they're in the hospital, right? That's kind of a clear guideline of, okay, well, they can't help that. They couldn't be in session because they're in a hospital bed. So how many late cancellations or no-shows are allowed before you refer a client out? This outlines it so there's no question, right? Do you offer a free late cancellation or no-show? You know, at my practice, we offer the one free late cancellation. That doesn't have anything to do with an emergency. We're just the first one is free. Then we remind them the next one's going to be charged. You know, what is yours? And you want to include that in your manual. Okay. You also want to include reasons to break confidentiality. We should all know this, but you want to outline it. Every reason to break confidentiality, outline what happens if the counselor sees the client outside of session. So for me, I tell my clients, if we see each other outside of session, then I'm not breaking confidentiality. I'm just going to act like I don't know you. If you want to say hi to me, absolutely, you can say hi to me. I'll say hi back at that point. You can break your own confidentiality, but I don't break it. And if we see each other and we're like, okay, that's strange, we'll talk about that in session. If they go our separate ways, that's okay too. And so you want to kind of outline some of those that each counselor in my practice can say that however they want to say it, but that's the basis of the guideline there. You want to outline what's considered risky behavior with adolescents that a parent should be notified for and what should be kept confidential. The family code and guidelines do not give any specifics. I've scrounged through that. And so it just says risky behavior. So what does risky behavior mean? Does smoking marijuana mean that's risky behavior? Does having sex mean that's risky behavior versus unprotected sex or smoking marijuana every single day? You know, what is that in your practice? It should be a little more guidelined, but it's not. So doing that within your practice is important. Terminating with a client, if the termination is planned, how do you handle that? If it's not planned, how do you handle that? The client just stops coming. Where do you write the termination note in those situations? So for example, if it is planned, you can write the termination right in the note if you want to. If it's not planned, and they just stop showing up, maybe you have to write a chart note for that. And how many emails or phone calls do you make to a client if they just stop showing up and what that looks like? So some of these things you might think, this is what I do. I just do this. But when you start hiring people, it's important that they also know your expectations and what you just do. And billing. Who takes billing? Do you, admin staff, the therapist, take payment? You want to outline that. When is payment taken? So if you have a brick and mortar and the client walks in, obviously you can take payment when they walk in. And for telehealth, like my practice is completely telehealth, we take payment all at once in the morning of the day of the session. And so that's outlined in their payment agreement that the client signed, that we take it the morning of the appointment. You want to put that in the manual as well for that understanding and ease. And do you have a service code that you require if you take insurance for counselors to use, like 90837, 90834, 53 plus minutes or 45 minutes? And what are the guidelines around those session time? And I'll give an example. This, in my practice, I do require 90837, which is 53 plus minutes. That also means you're more prone to audits because in some insurance companies don't like you to use 90837. And so we'll get into how I require notes and treatment plans in a little bit. But what happens when you're in session and the client just doesn't want to continue the session, or they're tired, or they're not feeling well, and they stay for 45 minutes versus 53 minutes? I did not have this guideline actually written originally. And do you eat the cost? Because I pay my counselors based on 90837. If they get the lower reimbursement rate for 90834, for 45 minutes, you know, cuts into the cost. So what happens? You know, so you want to outline that as well. for me in this situation, because I didn't have an outline, I ate the cost, right? But you want to have a guideline for that. And then any insurance credentialing details.
Let's see. We need to use NPI 2 for our contract therapist or employee therapist. I'm not sure. What does that mean, Rebecca?
Like which, for like you were talking about billing, do we start NPI 1 or 2? I always get those confused. NPI 1 is individual, right? NPI 2 is group?
Yes. Yeah. So I use the NPI 2 for the group. Unless I'm doing supervisory billing, which Cigna allows, and I do that for my associates. And that one is, well, it's under my NPI, but I still use it as a group as well because I'm paneled with the group. So
we had another question. Is the privacy policy and procedures manual needed if I'm the only therapist in the practice?
No, it's not. This is for when you want to hire, you know, your own policies and procedures and can follow them. But if you ever decide to bring on student interns or employees, then you would want to have one. But just for you, no, you don't need one. If you want to stay consistent with your own guidelines surrounding with clients, then you could definitely kind of write something up, but it's required. Email and phone guidelines is something that you can add in there as well. What times do you want your clinicians making phone calls? If you don't want them making calls to clients after 9 o'clock at night, that might be helpful to put in there. It sounds, some of these things sound like, okay, well, that seems, duh, don't call people after 9 o'clock at night, but it's just good and, you know, policy to have. When they make a call or email, how do you want them to document that? It's really good practice to write down or put down every email and every phone call that you have with a client in their notes. And so we have that, we do that in the chart notes within Simple Practice. And how long do they have to put that in the chart note? I think it's best practice to do it immediately, but sometimes that's not feasible. So 24, 48 hours, you want to kind of outline that as well. And a CPS report, you want to outline that in your manual as well. You want to remind them that there's a 48-hour guideline. You can report with a link or a phone and how to document that in interaction in the client's notes and files. I will say I had an interaction where this is helpful with a student of mine a previous semester. This student wrote in the notes something that needed to be reported. And I read and sign all of their notes, but it was a week before I got to reading and signing the note. And I read a week later the thing that needs to be reported to CPS and had to have a conversation and a meeting with this counselor about, hey, we have 48 hours and this needed to be brought to me. And so it's really good to have this guideline to say, one, you should know this already, but two, here's this guideline as a reminder, or I guess should know this isn't a good thing, but helpful to know this. I won't should on anybody. If a client's having suicidal thoughts, you want to outline going through what to assess for, what your policy says if they meet some of the requirements versus all of them, the differences between adults and minors. And for us, that's all telehealth. You want to in-person as well, but policies surrounding how to get the client to the hospital, because sometimes in Texas as a big state, they might be hours away. How to find a hospital. And I have a link in the manual, how to search for hospitals in their area. There's also a phone number you can call. And something that we also do is have them in our telehealth consent form, have the client put in their nine-digit non-emergency phone number for their local police department. Because if you call 911, you're getting your local police department, and then you have to go through this whole transfer stage that takes a long time. And if it's an emergency, you don't have that time. So we have a policy and procedure surrounding the client and the intake paperwork, putting their nine-digit non-emergency, and the police station can take the emergency phone call at the non-emergency number. Diagnosis and treatment plan. What are your guidelines surrounding treatment plans?
Membership, membership. Why would anyone want to join a membership? Because you're sick and tired of trying to find great information that will help you start your career, grow a practice, stay out of trouble, and oh, by the way, not be boring and outdated. You already know I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand that people actually want to finish. But why should you have to pay for every single resource I offer? Let me introduce the Step It Up membership. Step It Up members have access to over 50 trainings on everything from preparing your accounts for tax season to using SEO to improve your Google rankings, writing a book, staying HIPAA compliant, to learning how to create a press kit if you want to start public speaking. You also get access to over 25 courses that you can use as continuing education and that meet the new Texas 50% from an approved provider rule. Are you a supervisor looking for a consultation group? Step It Up members get free tickets to the Texas Supervisor Coalition monthly live consultation group featuring great speakers and incredible up-to-the-minute information to keep your license safe. Feel overwhelmed by lots of choices and want an interactive training with a real live person? I've got you covered. Step It Up members get weekly live training with me every single week. And did I mention that Step It Uppers get a coupon for $100 off the 40-hour training to become an LPC or LMFT supervisor in Texas? Yeah, you get that too. You're the one working your butt off, sweating through the summer, corralling kids, and facing slumps in your client load. I want to help. All summer long, I'm offering a 50% discount on the annual and monthly plan for the Step It Up membership. No contracts, and if you don't like it, quit anytime you like, but you're gonna love it. You are too important to lose because you pay too much for online courses, you sat through expensive, boring live trainings, and you got suckered into long-term commitments with memberships that just didn't deliver. It's time to take the next step in your counseling career. And it's super easy to do. Just go to katewalkertraining.com/podcast. That's katewalkertraining.com/podcast. But you gotta act fast. This is going away as soon as the summer ends. So get the discount, get the resources, and take your practice to the next level. I'll see you on the inside.
When you take insurance, you want to make sure they're measurable. So you want to outline in specific those SMART goals: measurable, specific, achievable, time-bound, relevant. And you want to outline exactly what's expected of the employees in case you're ever audited by insurance, that you have that outlined really well. If they use a simple treatment plan versus the Wiley treatment plan, you still have to make edits to the Wiley treatment plan in order for it to be measurable and time-bound. And so I show them how to do that as well. I have an example of, if you use the Wiley treatment planner, here's how you can make it measurable and time-bound and specific versus a simple treatment plan, and the timeline to have the treatment plan and diagnosis provided. We know that insurance requires a diagnosis immediately, but the treatment plan can wait a little bit.
You just mentioned a second ago that you sign all of the notes. Is that for everybody or just the students?
Just the students and the associates who are doing supervisory billing.
Okay.
Yeah. So my fully licensed clinicians, I do not sign the notes on. Even at the private pay clients, the way Simple Practice is set up, that I get all of, if I had it set up as I'm a supervisor, I get all of the notes. So for those who are doing supervisory billing with Cigna Insurance under me, I will sign off all of their notes and treatment plans.
And will you talk later in your presentation about, do you do occasional audits? Do you do audits every week? How do you hold people accountable for this? And I'm assuming you're going to get there, but I thought I'd ask anyway.
I remind about diagnosis and treatment plans. I'll look at them and double check and make sure. And I'll ask them to make edits whenever they're not measurable, right, or specific to what would be helpful for an insurance audit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have a few questions. Besides Cigna, what other insurance companies allow supervisory billing?
Yes. Aetna will allow in Texas. I don't know if people are outside of Texas. In Texas, Cigna will, Aetna will, and United will, if, only if you have 5 or more fully licensed clinicians on your plan. So I don't have 5 or more. We are paneled with United, but you have to have 5 fully licensed clinicians to be considered a group practice with United, and then you can do supervisory billing. So Cigna and Aetna will love it. Aetna takes forever to get paneled with, and I've been trying for over a year, and so we're still working on that one. But I don't do supervisor billing with Aetna yet, but I will.
And we have a question. Would it be okay to give an associate supervisor access to sign the treatment plan through EMR platform or their notes?
Mm-hmm. You can. If the insurance billing is under you, you would need to sign off on the notes. If it's not, and they have a separate supervisor, then yes, they can sign off on the notes. It's not a requirement. It is a requirement if you're doing supervisory billing.
And is supervisory billing only for LPCS or can it be LPC?
It can be for LPC, to my understanding, based on the way it's written in the insurance guidelines. You're their supervisor as their employer. And so it's under you as fully licensed clinician. Yeah. Supervisory billing is where you're fully licensed and you are paneled with an insurance company and people under you, like LPC associates. Student interns cannot do supervisory billing, only associates. They can bill under you. So you're responsible for signing the notes and the treatment plans, and your name is on the billing. They're the provider, but your name is on it as who it's billed under. And so that's kind of how that works. And so that allows associates to take some insurances, which is super helpful.
So there was a question above that. Ashley, do you take insurance or only private pay?
Insurance. Yeah.
But your grad students, right? I mean,
yes, we do both. My grad students are private pay, and I do have a rate of $30. So my grad students see clients for only $30. So it's great whenever you have clients who insurance deductibles are super high and they can't afford it, or they don't have insurance and they can't afford to pay a full rate, then the student interns will see them. And most of my students are pretty full this summer. That is a shorter semester, so they need a few more, but most of them are pretty full.
Awesome.
There is no minimum number of people you have to have with Cigna or Aetna. That's correct. The grad students, actually, they do not have to get paid. I did attempt to pay them last semester and I was losing money, so I had to stop. I really wanted to be able to do that. I'd have to raise the rate and being able to meet a client who's needing a lower payment and paying the intern just didn't work. Hopefully I figure out how to do that, because I would really love to continue to pay students, but it didn't work at this last semester. But yeah, you are correct. They do not get paid at this time. So treatment plans, you definitely want to make sure that they meet criteria. And the good thing about my manual is I have a treatment plan that's measurable in the manual as well that meets kind of these goals. Progress note. This is a little bit of a lengthy section because my progress notes are a little lengthy. Again, progress notes, you want to make sure that you have a start date, a start time, and an end time in your progress note for insurance. If you don't take insurance, you don't have to worry about this. But if you take insurance, you want to have a start time and end time and the appropriate session code. The location of the session, is it online versus in person? If it's telehealth, is the client at home or are they at a different location and you want to document that? You want to list the targeted symptoms that originated from. So are they coming to you because they've experienced sexual assault or childhood trauma or recent depression? Checkboxes here are great. So it doesn't have to be all written. You can have a combination of writing and checkboxes to make it easier. Counseling theory used in session, CBT, EMDR, EFT, whatever you're using, checkboxes are great there as well. SOAP note, kind of within this process or within the note portion, the subjective, objective assessment and progress. You do want to write some things in those sections. What is the major presenting symptoms? Guilt, shame, rumination. Checkboxes are great there as well. I missed the top, what's the deadline to have a progress note written? I am the worst at getting progress notes done on time. I still see clients. And so I do have a 5 business day policy for my counselors to try to get them done in that time. I know that's kind of iffy because some insurance companies want them done in 48 hours, but we have to be realistic. Sometimes life is busy. Providing an example of a progress note in the manual. Major themes in the session: substance use, treatment planning, conflict and relationships. the interventions used, grounding skills, coping skills. These are check boxes as well, but I do have where if you check on a grounding skill, you can write in. For EMDR, this is helpful for me because for those resourcing like the calm, peaceful place or the light stream grounding activities, you can write down exactly what they have told you in those items. So that's helpful to remember for future sessions. The objective findings, are they oriented to time, place, mood, client strengths, assessment of progress, the estimated discharge time, and medical necessity. When you're taking insurance, this part, especially when you're using 90837, which is the 53 plus minute time in session, you want to outline medical necessity. That can be anything from significant trauma history to establishing rapport with a new client, or you know, client is demonstrating suicidal thoughts, or to prevent higher level of care. This is a checkbox section as well that I have, that you just check one or all of the things of the reason why you're having a longer to insurance standards, even though it's really a standard counseling appointment, but to insurance standards, 53 plus minutes, it'll like. So you want to outline medical necessity for that. And I do have that example in my manual. For minor clients, what does that first session look like? Is it with intake? Is the intake with parents only, parent and child? Do you leave that up to your counselors? Custody paperwork. If both biological parents are not together, you need custody paperwork. If it's there, if it's not, they need to sign a document saying that they don't have custody paperwork. Who takes the custody paperwork? Who's responsible for making sure it's there, and who gets that from the client or the parents? And the collateral participation agreement, this one comes from actually Laurel Clement, which Kate, I saw you have a thing with her soon. But the collateral participation agreement is if you're having a session with a parent alone to talk about the client, it's for the purpose of the client. It's not a requirement, but it is best practice to have them sign this, which basically says, I understand I'm not the client. I am here to help support the client. This can be with an individual client as well, adult client who a partner's coming in for one session just as a support for the client in some way. You would want them to sign this as well, saying, I understand I'm not the client. I'm here in support of the client for this one session. And actually, Laurel Clement on her website gives this for free, the collateral participation agreement. So go to laurelclement.com to get that. Reasons to break confidentiality for minors. This goes back to earlier what we talked about, substance use, self-harm, other risky behaviors, outlining exactly what that looks like. Telehealth best practices. If the client's not alone, how do you handle that? If they're drinking or using a substance during session, how do you handle that? Which we've actually had a couple of times with telehealth. It's like they're home and they're relaxed. And we recently had one client that did not take that well, telling them that could not be a thing. And that was rough. But you want to outline that, the expectation of the counselor to say, hey, we can't have this during session. If the client is not home, do you allow it? Obviously, if they're within their state, within Texas. If they're not home, if they're in their car but not driving, is that okay? You got to get their location. You know, you want to outline some of these things. Know your state rules and reasons to reschedule. If they're in their car and driving, we got to reschedule. If they're under the influence, not alone, these are reasons to reschedule a telehealth appointment. Dress code. This seems one of those silly things, but you definitely want to outline dress code here. It can be as lenient or as strict as you want, but having a policy allows just for a standard procedure here. You don't want them wearing political or controversial information on their clothing, then state that. That way, if they do and it bothers you or it bothers the client, we can kind of go back to the guideline. And my manual, it does, because we're telehealth only, it says, look, you know, nice shirt, look presentable, but jokingly, pajama pants are mandatory. So this just allows for team cohesion, compliance, and establishing boundaries. Maintaining client files and policies. Do you prefer to send a summary over sending over all client notes? The clients are able to get their notes, but if they're wanting like a lawyer to have their notes or somebody else, why would it benefit to have a summary versus sending over all of their notes. It's to protect them. If you do a summary, do you charge for this? If they do want all of the notes, do you have an administrative fee for getting all of that together and outlining that in the manual as well? And additional things to add, non-compete clause. Mine basically says I don't have one, but it does say that it's there. And it does say that I don't believe in a non-compete clause. Other people do, and that's completely fine. But I do say that to not actively take clients from my practice while they're still employed. So if I've scheduled them a new client, don't take them to another practice, like the next session while they're still working for me. While they're working for me, keep them with me. Once they're done, the client has the freedom to take them. So take them, you know, that's completely fine. Give them their options and then allow that counselor-client relationship to continue. What ending employment looks like. I also have legal verbiage in there surrounding substance use, legal charges, days the clinic is closed. I did have a lawyer help me with this manual and my employment contract, and paid about $1,400 for them both to just kind of, I wrote most of the manual, but put some legal verbiage in there as well. You want to add benefits and payroll here. And I know this is a lot of information and I apologize, but it's so important to have all of this information. Paid vacation and paid sick leave. Do you offer that? And how is it earned? And how is it paid out? I offer both of those. Do you offer an end of year bonus? How is that earned and paid out? Services provided, email, phone, computer, Wi-Fi stipend, malpractice insurance, paid meetings, EHR. Like, what are the things that you're providing for them being employed with you? And guidelines for all of the above. If they leave within a year, do you have a specific guideline? Do they pay something back? Payroll details. What dates are they paid? How much are they paid? How many days do they have to correct a payroll or an appointment error? So if the client canceled before 24 hours and should not have been charged, but the counselor forgot to change it to canceled and they were still charged, what happens, you know, in that scenario? And then legal verbiage about agreeing to the policies and procedures and the employee signature is important here. And you want to review the manual and have them sign it. It's good to do it once a year. But as the policy changes, especially around like paid time off or payroll or benefits, you want to have them sign an addendum to it as it changes. So big signature review once a year. And if something big changes that is effective immediately, then you want that to sign an addendum to it and write out what is changing. And that is it.
Hey, badasses, we can all agree that counselors want a path to a successful counseling career, but that means you have to find quality training. That's not even the real barrier. The real problem is a lot of information can be overwhelming, and you, my badass, are busy. So you're probably asking yourself, how can I improve my practice while still caring for people? How do I grow my skill set, become a supervisor, without losing my work-life balance? How do I find quality training that won't cost too much time and money? Bottom line, counselors who want a successful counseling career value the goal of growing their skill set and even becoming a supervisor, but at the same time struggle with finding time to attend quality courses. Counselors can't overcome this barrier because so many times courses with tempting titles overpromise and underperform. Let me ask you something. What if there were courses that delivered exactly what they promised, that didn't take a lot of time, and didn't break the bank? That's exactly the kind of course we design at Kate Walker Training. I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand. And we have so many to choose from. If you're asking yourself, where do I go if I want to sustain my practice and grow my marketing presence? Well, check out the Step It Up membership. What do you do if you're ready to pay it forward and add streams of income? Well, check out the supervisor training. See if you're eligible. If you're looking for an experience that's more hands-on, Keep an eye out for open enrollment for Badass Basics and our exclusive mastermind groups. I'm Dr. Kate Walker. Thank you so much for listening to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses. Thank you to Ridgely Walker for her lovely voiceovers at our introduction. And do me a favor, when you get a second, please like, share, and subscribe, and write us a review. That's really how we get picked up by other RSS feeds, and we get this information out to the mental health badasses who need it. Thanks again, and keep saving the world with excellent therapy.